The Rocky Mountain District is the second largest geographical district of the Senate. We are second only to the Northwest District. They have Alaska. We are bigger than Texas, and we actually have a part of Texas in our district. So we're Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, a little bit of Texas we call El Paso, and then we have two congregations in Nebraska and one in Arizona as well. So it is a ginormous amount of territory to cover.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today, our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series takes us to the Rocky Mountain District. I think we should have taken a field trip for this one. It would have been fun to go to the Rocky Mountains.
Yes. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul at csp.edu.
Joining us today, the Reverend James Maxwell. He serves as president of the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and Rock of Ages Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Pastor Maxwell, welcome to the Coffee Hour.
Thank you so much for having me on. It is a blessing.
We are looking forward to learning about how you serve as president of the Rocky Mountain District and about your service to Rock of Ages Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs as well. Before we talk about all those things, though, we get to talk about you and some of your favorite things. We start off with the lightning round in this series. Are you ready, sir?
I suppose so. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Favorite color?
Blue.
It's a popular one. Mm-hmm. Favorite cuisine?
That one is a harder answer. I do not discriminate. I just like food.
I like that cuisine. It's a good one.
Andy. Yeah.
I'm with you. Favorite book?
Treasure Island.
Okay. Favorite office supply? Very important question.
Colored pencils.
Oh. That's a unique.
Wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I like that.
I'll expound later.
Okay.
This is a lightning.
That's right. I'll mark that one. I marked it. All right. Favorite dessert?
Cheesecake.
Favorite vacation destination?
Anywhere with water and a campfire.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite hymn?
Favorite hymn? This was a little bit harder. It's either between Jesus, Savior, Pilot, Me, or Abide With Me.
Those are two really good ones. I can see why you can't choose. All right. Last one. Favorite time of day?
I'd say later afternoon, early evening. Sunset.
All right. You passed the lightning round. Congratulations. 2,000 points. All right. Let's talk about where you grew up. Tell us about what was home for you or what is home for you. Where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I grew up in Oakland, California, right across the bay from San Francisco, and lived in the same house my entire life. Home congregation is Zion Lutheran Church in Piedmont. California. It used to be Oakland, and then they moved properly to Piedmont, right on the border. But that's where I was born, raised, then went to school in Irvine for 4 years before going to St. Louis Seminary.
So tell us about the journey from your childhood through Irvine. What was it that drew you to Irvine and eventually to the seminary?
Okay. So about somewhere in high school, started kicking the idea around of what would it like to be a pastor, and even asked my pastor one evening as I was accolading for either an Advent or a midweek Lenten service. I don't remember which one, but we're in the back. The organist is doing the prelude before it's time to go out. And I asked him why one would become a pastor. And his snarky response was poor judgment. But then he expounded and said, you know what, but there are some wonderful things about the ministry. And we talked about it. And then I talked with our associate pastor at the time, too, about it. And I just started to have that desire, that pull. The congregation I grew up in was a very liturgical congregation. We weren't afraid of high church at all. Our organist was director of the San Francisco Bach Choir. And so the things he could do with that little church organ were just phenomenal. And so we did some amazing worship services, and my pastor put me in charge of orchestrating a lot of the processionals that we would do, training the acolytes. And then when we had We would have a big circuit Reformation service every single year. And he had me boss the area clergy around. And he would have me take them to the different parts of the chancel where they were supposed to read, when they would serve as celebrant, and each one had a different part. And the office is not a Lutheran office, but it's in the Episcopal Church called the Verger, V-E-R-G-E-R. And you carry the shepherd's crook and you serve as the bishop's usher. And so that's what he had me do, is to lead the clergy around for the different parts of the service. And so I just got my feet wet doing that. And then after high school, I was either going to go to Irvine and enroll in pre-seminary, or I was going to go to University of Oregon and study landscape architecture, kind of two very different paths, because I really enjoy the visual arts, but I did not want to be a starving artist. So I was trying to figure out a way to incorporate my artistic skill with something that could actually make money. And then I chose the ministry. So there you have it. But that's kind of what I did.
Tell us about your time at Concordia University Irvine, what you studied there, what you valued about your opportunity to be a student at Concordia University Irvine.
Well, Irvine was a fantastic place to really dive in, get a basis in what ministry is about. I majored in theology, took the Greek, took the Hebrew, so I didn't have to go through the fabled summer Greek at the seminary. And so I had that already going in. But it was a good time to interact with different professors, and then also to interact with the DCEs, the teachers. And even though there is a polite rivalry between the pre-sem guys and the DCEs and the educators, and sometimes you hang out and sometimes you don't, but we're going at a Concordia is a different experience than just the seminary, because you get to mingle and interact with those who are serving in a different church office than you. And that's a healthy thing for pastors to recognize, that we are not an island, that there are others who serve alongside us.
So it sounds like you had a really good time at Concordia Irvine, learned a lot. Yeah, had a good formational experience. Tell us about the seminary, what that experience was like for you.
Seminary was good. I would say that going to the seminary, at the time in my life, we did not have necessarily the same experience as a lot of other people did. We were newly married. I met my wife my sophomore year of college, but she was not going to Irvine, and she grew up Roman Catholic. So it was kind of a recent convert to Lutheranism. And so when we wound up at the seminary, and we had that discussion very early on that, okay, well, if we're going to pursue marriage, you have to know what I'm wanting to do, and you have to be okay with that. And she was. So we get to the seminary, though, and they offered us on-campus housing. And my wife, as a former Roman Catholic, really was not into the whole monastic lifestyle that the seminary could offer. And she says, no, we need a little bit of distance. I didn't sign up for you to be a monk and me to be a nun. We need to go live in an apartment. And so that's what we did. And it was fantastic. But when people talk about their experience on the seminary, how they simply just lived there 24/7, and they soaked up everything that seminary had to offer. I was one of those that I studied very dutifully. I went to all my classes. I had a work study job in the library. I did cataloging there. And then I went home and worked on my marriage. And that is kind of, and I think I made the right choice with that, but we didn't live, eat, drink, breathe everything seminary all the time. And I think that was in some ways healthy for us. And I don't know if that's a popular thing right now concerning opinions on the seminary or not, but that's kind of what we did. But I enjoyed my experience there very much. It was good to interact with the professors, and then also some of the brother students who I both agreed with on some things and then didn't agree with on some things. It was neat.
Take us to the next chapter after seminary. Where did the Lord bring you after that?
Okay. So we, after seminary, went to Whitefish, Montana, because Karen and I both grew up outside of, we both grew up in Oakland, California. And so we said we wanted to go west, not because we necessarily agree with the culture, but we understand how the culture thinks. And we figured that would be a good spot. And the seminary said, well, we got you west, just not as far west as you wanted to go. And so we landed in Whitefish, Montana. And Whitefish, Montana was fantastic in many ways. But there are two seasons in Whitefish, Montana. There's winter, and winter is coming. And for 10 months out of the year, it can snow. They can actually snow in any month of the year, but it was pretty cold. June is spring, July and August are summer, and September is fall, and the rest of it was winter. And so that was very trying in some ways for two California kids, but we learned to love a lot of what that ministry was like up there. And then 4 years later, we got the call to Rock of Ages in Colorado Springs and have been here more or less ever since.
Tell us about the congregation that you serve now, Rock of Ages. Tell us a little bit about what you love being a pastor at Rock of Ages and the people you get to serve there.
Oh, okay. I enjoy my congregation because we are not a stuffy Lutheran congregation. The people are, they enjoy coming to church on Sunday morning. And yes, we are a traditional liturgical congregation, but sometimes I wouldn't necessarily say we are rigidly so. During the organ prelude before service, you can hear, even on the live stream, people are talking. You can hear them in the narthex. You can hear them in the sanctuary. They're not stoic. They are even during Lent, they are still genuinely happy to be in the house of the Lord to receive his gifts. And so that's been a good thing with the culture here at my congregation. And I have fed off that and helped to foster that further. And it's been good. They're a fun bunch of people who really enjoy hearing the word, receiving the sacrament, and they don't take themselves very seriously. We take God very, that's kind of our motto here, is we take God very seriously, but not ourselves.
We're talking with the Reverend James Maxwell, president of the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Gilseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today. Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Gilseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend James Maxwell, president of the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and pastor of Rock of Ages Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Let's talk a little bit about the Rocky Mountain District. I assume it involves some of the Rocky Mountains, but what exactly is the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod?
Okay, so the Rocky Mountain District is the second largest geographical district of the Synod. We are second only to the Northwest District, and they cheat because they have Alaska. But we are, and I'm going to say this on radio, I guess, is that we are bigger than Texas. And we actually have a part of Texas in our district. So we're Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, a little bit of Texas we call El Paso. And then we have two congregations in Nebraska and one in Arizona as well. So it is a ginormous amount of territory to cover. 164 congregations, two high schools, 28 schools, 47 preschools. It keeps us busy.
Wow. That is quite a territory to cover. So tell us about your duties as president of the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. What does that consist of for you on a regular basis?
I I'm supposed to say it's ecclesiastical supervision, right?
Oh, okay.
But really, it's about visiting the congregations, visiting the ministries, visiting the workers, and making sure that everything that they are taken care of and that they're taking care of their people, theologically and doctrinally, so as well as practically. The bulk of the problems I run into as I'm out visiting really have less to do with an adherence to false doctrine. I almost never encounter that. That's not to say that I don't. There are always issues that creep in from time to time, but really it's more, they'll say, President Maxwell, as you're visiting with my congregation today, can you somehow bring up in your question and answer with them that it would be good that pastors and our workers could be paid a living wage so that we can continue to serve them? And so really it's troubleshooting those kinds of problems a lot. And out here on the frontier in the West, we don't have the typical Midwestern problem either, where there's a Lutheran church on every corner. We drive hours sometimes between congregations, and many of them are small. And when one of those congregations is vacant, the problem of how do they get another pastor becomes very clear. And so we're constantly trying to troubleshoot, trying to strategize. That's most of what my work consists of, is getting around to the different churches and helping them come up with plans to not just stay open, but also to thrive. How do we do the best we can with what God's given us?
How does being involved still in pastoral ministry help inform what you do as a district president?
Oh, it gives me a greater joy. I would say, I think that's a very honest way to put it, because the district president role, while there's joy in it, so much is administrative and troubleshooting different problems. Some people have equated the presidency to just being a firefighter. You're always responding to the next thing that comes up. But in pastoral ministry, when you're giving a sermon to your own parish, you know what your people struggle with, what they need to hear, how they need encouragement each week, drawn from the text. You're not giving the law and gospel to a group of people you don't know in some generic way, but you are able to apply it in ways that are tangible to them so that they hear it, so that you can look out on the congregation and see that, okay, they're not asleep, they're taking this in, they're smiling or they're grimacing, and you know exactly why. And it makes all the difference in the world. And because, I mean, being a pastor, it's fun to preach, it's fun to teach, and it's fun to deepen and strengthen my faith with a group of people that I'm helping to do that same thing with.
You mentioned the Rocky Mountain District being the frontier. You don't serve as a lone ranger on the frontier as well. Tell us about the crew that you get to serve with on the Rocky Mountain.
Yeah, sure. So we have, initially, when I first stepped in, we had a very small staff. It was myself, my ed exec, my administrative assistant, and then our bookkeeper. And since then, we brought on two part-time mission execs to assist in that role. And we now have a new education exec as well. But the team is just tremendous. We went for a period of time. The way so many different organizations go is that we had, due to budget cuts, we weren't able to bring on a mission exec. And we made it a priority as a board during the last triennium. And we said, well, we've got a tremendous amount of work to do. We can't keep doing it and burning out our volunteers the way we are. So let's reorganize some funding models and let's hire some staff. And so that's what we did. And it's going extremely well. So Pastor Cody, who still serves as a pastor in Alamosa, Colorado, he's part-time doing the missions and advancement sign, then Deaconess DeGroat, who's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, or outside of Albuquerque. She does the mission side and then also the mercy side of it, leaning into her deaconess training as well. And bringing the two of them on, because originally we were looking for a full-time, and neither one of them really was wanting full-time, even though they applied to a full-time position. I went to both and said, hey, Would you consider part-time work? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And they have just been a tremendous team. They've been able to accomplish so much in the last year, trying to get things off the ground, as we're really also looking towards Utah to do a tremendous amount of mission work in the state of Utah, because we have the whole state. We only have 11 churches in this whole state of Utah, and several of them need a lot of additional help. There are so many people in Utah, not just with the Mormon population, but also just the non-believers, the unbelievers who need to hear about Jesus in the state of Utah. And it's a mission field in our own backyard. We're going after it. They're coming up with all kinds of plans and neat ideas to do that as well. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, we were able to talk with Deaconess Tegroat, and she does some really wonderful work. It sounds like you have a great team, able to do a lot of things in a very, very large district. The mission field aspect in Utah, I'm sure, presents some unique challenges for you as well. Why are you a pastor in the LCMS today?
Why am I a pastor? I think I should have a better answer than this, other than it's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy helping people to grow in their relationship with Jesus, to walk with people when they're hurting, and to rejoice with people when they're rejoicing. There's no other quote unquote job that gives you that opportunity. And there are hard parts of being a pastor too, but there is so much joy. And that's different than happiness, of course, but there's a lot of joy to it. I don't know what else I would do.
All right, we have just a couple minutes left. I think it's time to go back and unpack a little bit from the lightning round. When we asked about favorite vacation destination, you said anywhere with water and a campfire. How many chairs are around the campfire is the question.
So when it's my wife and our four kids, there are 6 chairs around the campfire. But we have done larger vacations with friends, and there are more. And sometimes it's just Karen and me, the two of us, and that's just fine. There are many times where I've even done a solo trip, and it's just me sitting in a chair by the campfire, and the ability to sit there for hours is amazing. And
so in
all of God's creation.
What's in your hand while you're sitting by the campfire? Anything?
So that depends on the time of day. If it's the morning, it's a cup of coffee. If it's mm-hmm. the evening, it could be a beer or a good bourbon. So... Mm-hmm. Not typically in s'more. I'm not really big on s'mores, surprisingly.
Okay.
Good to know. When we camp at some point.
Right, exactly. Random fact.
Now, you promised us that there was a story about the colored pencils, so now I have to ask you what that story is.
Oh, okay. It's not that deep of a story, but it's basically that I prefer to use color as I'm taking notes or working on projects. And I will alternate between different colors at random. It helps me focus better. And I don't take notes in linear fashion either, but I'm more of a mind map person. So circles and drawings the whole way. It simply helps me focus, it channels my creativity a little bit. And so colored pencils are a great way to do that.
I also take notes in different colors all over the place. So I feel that very much.
Yeah. All right. Can you see it?
Yep. Visual arts. It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun. Another fun episode in getting to know the Council of Presidents. Our guest today, the Reverend James Maxwell, he serves as president of the Rocky Mountain District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and pastor at Rock of Ages Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Pastor Maxwell, thanks so much for taking time to spend some time with us here on the Coffee Hour today.
Yeah. Thank you both. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour is a production of KFUO. This program and our station are dependent on listeners just like you. To support KFUO Radio, our podcast, and all the other programming, please make your gift or pledge today at kfuo.org/give and help us continue sharing the good news of Christ for you anytime, anywhere. KFUO.org/give.